Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Mbuga. This evening, we'll talk about the deepening crisis in Burundi. And with us tonight is John Manarakiza. John is a member of the Burundian diaspora in the United States. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon, Douglas. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Also joining us is Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst, is joining us as usual from Durban, South Africa. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas, and you listeners. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. Gentlemen, as I said, welcome to the show. And tonight we're going to talk about the situation in Burundi. Things don't seem to be improving. Yesterday, the Kenyan president, Uhuru Kenyatta, urged Burundian leader Pierre Nkurunziza to revive peace talks and prevent the East African nation from plunging into full-blown war. Burundi, as our listeners may know, has been mired in a political crisis since President Nkurunziza announced in April he planned to run for a third term, a move opponents said violated the constitution and a peace treaty that ended a 12-year civil war in 2005. So far, hundreds have been killed since the April, and almost 200,000 people have fled to neighboring countries. Let me start with John here in Washington. Your general assessment of the situation in Burundi now, what's your take? How are things moving over there from your sources?
Thank you. I believe it's not getting any better. As you said, last week there was a UN Security Council resolution on Burundi condemning the worsening of the situation and asking the party to actually go back and on the table to get dialogue. And it looks like the trend is getting that a lot of people are getting killed by security forces, and there was actually a language, a rhetoric that was used by high officials, beginning with the president of the Senate and the president himself, the Minister of Security, basically reviving some of the fear that the region, based on the history of the region, when you start hearing hate speech by authorities, it raised the level of concern by the world, and you could see that the whole world was actually turning to Burundi, and even President Obama had to make a message specifically for Burundi and talking to the Burundi people not to go the way of Rwanda in 94. So the situation is critical, and we have to at least call again, urge the parties to actually take on the way of dialogue rather than a violent conflict.
Suleiman, it appears from most observers that President Pierre Nkurunziza has dug in, and that doesn't seem to be a good sign that there will be a peaceful resolution of that situation there.
No doubt about it. President Pierre Nkurunziza is dug in the situation in the region. He's following the template which was set by other leaders in the region, the template president of Uganda, set by DRC, was nearly going to the same way in Sudan, intervention of bloodshed. Where he's going, in the region. And by the way, the history of the region is not bothered.
Suleiman, your line is breaking up. I'm going to have to call you right back so that we can maybe get you clear. All right?
Okay.
Yes. Meanwhile, John, let's play this report from our correspondent in Geneva about the concerns that the international community is getting about the situation in Burundi.
Until now, the situation in Burundi mainly has been a political crisis. Observers say President Pierre Nkurunziza, who won a disputed third term in July, is determined to do whatever it takes to remain in power. UN human rights officials say they worry that this situation could rapidly turn into an ethnic as well as a regional conflict. Scott Campbell is chief of the Central and West African section of the UN's Human Rights Office. He says recent statements by Rwanda's President Paul Kagame invoking that nation's 1994 genocide show his concern about Rwanda being drawn into the Burundi crisis. Campbell says growing violence and human rights abuses since April, when Nkurunziza declared he would run again, have forced 280,000 people to flee their homes. He says 200,000 have gone to Tanzania, Rwanda, and the Democratic Republic of Congo.
In DRC, there are refugee camps very close to the border, a number of kilometers from the border between Bujumbura and the Uvira area, housing refugees. But we have very serious concerns that these camps are being used as both recruitment ground for armed groups, but also by the Burundian authorities to identify opponents and threaten and intimidate them.
The United Nations documented 510 human rights violations last month in Burundi, including 55 extrajudicial killings, up from 40 in September. Campbell says he blames security forces and allied militia groups. He says there were 52 documented cases of torture and around 400 cases of arbitrary arrests and detentions in October. He also says more international pressure must be brought to bear upon Burundi's president to prevent the spread of violence. Campbell is urging the UN Security Council to take strong action that could include sanctions, freezing individual assets of those who incite or engage in violence, and travel bans. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thanks, Lisa. That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. Suleiman, I'm sure you're back. You see, when you hear this template of having militia groups fighting along government forces, that doesn't quite augur well for any country.
It is very worrisome. It is very worrisome. But as I've already indicated, it is not new. Nkurunziza is doing it because it is the culture within the region. He is not the first. The intransigence, the impunity, the arrogance of leadership of people who are wielding power, taking over or usurping people's power, is not new only in Burundi. The template started in Uganda. Some seven of Uganda did the same. Kagame in Rwanda, DRC is the same. Central African Republic is the same. So it is the culture within the region. They don't care. People have started dying because Nkurunziza is purging all those who are opposed to him. The same thing happened in Uganda. Uganda had to go through a 20-year civil war. And in the meantime, so many people lost their lives as to enter into the leadership which we have in Uganda today. So it is very worrisome, and anything can happen. Another genocide can happen if leadership doesn't come up from the region and from the international community.
John, people talk of exerting pressure on President Nkurunziza. But that has been the song since before he even ran for this controversial term. And nothing seems to have happened. What other pressure should be exerted on him, brought to bear on him to seek a peaceful resolution?
I believe pressure can work if it's well coordinated within the region. So as long as, for example, the East African community is not united on action that should be taken, it can be difficult to basically apply pressure. Remember that Pierre Buyoya, who was the president there two times in Burundi, on his second time, he was under pressure under international sanction. And it was because Tanzania, which was the biggest player in the region, was willing to apply pressure. And at this moment, it does not look like we will see whether the new government of Tanzania will do. Otherwise, pressure can be absorbed, and the Nkurunziza is actually leveraging on the use of AMISOM troops to get money to actually try to relieve some of his pressure. But we believe that if the region is serious about the action to be taken, Ashok Kenyatta is actually listening to the Chinese. And once the Chinese start saying that we need to talk, I think Nkurunziza should actually start listening, because he had the Chinese and the Russians and Angola as the people who basically were behind him. So now they are trying to they are changing their position at least.
But then, Suleiman, the international community has put their faith into one of the regional leaders, Yoweri Museveni of Uganda, to mediate. And he's involved in his own presidential campaign. And even some people have argued he doesn't even have the moral wherewithal to exert pressure on Nkurunziza. How does that one work then?
It is just absurd, because Museveni himself has... He laid the foundation. He was the first to change the constitution the way Nkurunziza has done. He was in changing the constitution, he went through the same repression which is happening in Burundi. So not only that, Mr. Museveni has been involved in all the conflicts around the region. One wonders how neutral he is, because he has been in DRC, he has been in Rwanda, he's in Central African Republic, he's all over. He himself has got no moral authority. So one doubts whether he can even lead a sensible negotiation of ceasing the hostilities in these particular countries. Already, he has been given almost quite a time, but he has not come up with anything substantial. So already it shows that he himself as a mediator, he leaves a lot to be desired.
So, John, how about that point? Because the point man has issues himself, and they are harsh words from Kigali, and people, the throwback is, well, you're just following the same footsteps.
Well, it shows how much difficulties we have in that region, as Suleiman just mentioned. The culture in the region is that all these so-called strong men are the ones who basically build up, consolidate power in their own hands, and then end up using some fake popularity to say that they are indispensable. And once you have that club, it's a club, and you have one member of that club to be the chief facilitator, it doesn't really make too much sense. And that's why maybe we should look outside of the box and bring in the initial Arusha facilitators. They are still there. They are still there. The Salim Ahmed Salim, the Kofi Annan, and the Thabo Mbeki. Those guys are still there. They could play a role in bringing this party together, rather than have one who's part of the problem, trying to solve the problem.
I see. Well, in case you're just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the deepening crisis in Burundi, and our panelists are John Manurakiza, a member of the Burundi diaspora here in the U.S., and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, here in Studio 9 in Washington. I throw this one back to both of you, beginning with Suleiman. There are reports that insurgents took responsibility yesterday for a failed mortar attack overnight on Burundi's presidential palace in one of the first known such attempts in months of anti-government unrest. If the people begin fighting back, aren't things out of hand so quickly, and then maybe it may be too late?
You know, Douglas, the dilemma which we have on the continent is that there is shifting awareness of the people on the continent. Generally speaking, people are tired of dictatorship. But the unfortunate part of it is that the leadership, the dictators on the continent at the moment have not realized that their time has run out. Nkurunziza should have been the last person to change the constitution to force himself on the people, because things had already happened in Egypt, things had already happened in Tunisia, things had already happened in Burkina Faso. People are realizing that one leader cannot be in the country forever. So much as he feels that the culture within the region is that those who have got the guns, those who feel they have got the monopoly of the gun can repress others, it seems in Burundi it may not be possible from the beginning. It already shows that people are willing to dislodge them. So it is high time the region and the international community realizes that unless there are serious efforts to make Nkurunziza to calm down, people are going to fight back, and it is very worrisome. It won't stop the way it is going right now.
I say, John, yes, this question of insurgents fighting back, if people like this reported failed mortar attack on the Burundi presidential palace, if people take up arms, won't it be too late for the intervention of maybe regional leaders, international community?
Well, it can be too late because so far people have died and it was unnecessary. Because the Nkurunziza is not willing to de-escalate the conflict. I believe the quote by John F. Kennedy is right. If you deny people peaceful revolution, it ends up ending in violent revolution. So it's kind of predictable. People will not take the violence sitting down until, I mean, the other thing is, if Nkurunziza listened to the world, even part of his political party, half of which is in exile because they advised him about the danger of taking this road, he could have done a step down and just de-escalate. But again, we're talking about a culture of impunity, a culture of in our case of Burundi, someone believe he's providentially anointed to run the country forever. And if you're going to work at a providential level, we don't have any need for constitutions or laws. We need basically people to say, okay, I've been appointed by God. And this is basically the problem in Burundi. And the players, the danger is that once you have non-state actors beginning to claim this violence, it becomes out of hand. You have the whole region now in trouble.
John, before I go to Suleiman, is there fear of this problem taking on an ethnic dimension?
Yes, there is a fear for that because Nkurunziza is out of argument. He has 10 years of rule. The country has actually backslid economically, socially. Well, there was some semblance of stability, but the country is actually not better than when he came. So he found the boogeyman in ethnic solidarity, which is easy when you have an illiterate, mostly illiterate population. So you can pull on that string. And they've been trying to do that. The party, his party in February started doing propaganda saying this is the Tutsis wanting to come and get back the power. And you, the Hutus, have to stand with your Hutu people so that they don't take the power. And you can see how dangerous that is where that can lead. It can lead into an ethnic conflict and genocide.
Suleiman, following up on John's point there, given the composition in the neighboring Rwanda, the balance of power there as far as ethnicity is concerned and in Burundi, Some people have expressed fears also that maybe it could suck in Rwanda, and then that would be would escalate the situation.
Already it is simmering, Douglas. Already President Kagame has expressed his outrage. That one already sucks in Rwanda. And so long as migrations continue, so long as the poverty continues, so long as internal displacement continues, so long as the hopelessness continues, anything can spark it off. And once it has sparked off, it will be very difficult to stop it. Right now, as we are speculating, it is a time bomb, because already we have got the traditional fault lines. They have never sealed totally. They can erupt any time. You are talking of a 12-year civil war. It has not healed only because of this short period. So within a short time, anything can spark off an ethnic-oriented scaffold, and it can lead to a lot of loss of lives for the people. So the earlier we get intervention in Burundi, the better. But the way my brother has said, we have, first of all, to resolve, the international community has to get a new set of facilitators. Museveni of Uganda cannot be a facilitator because he's part of the problem. He's part of the culture of what people in Burundi are fighting against. Museveni was a problem in southern Sudan. He has been a co-problem in southern Sudan. Now he cannot be brought again in Burundi. So the first problem to be sorted out is to get a new set of facilitators, and then number two, to get a new reorientation of the politics within the region.
Yes, John, the people are talking of reviving peace talks, but what should be the parameters of these talks? Because it's not a matter of negotiating peace. I think there should be some change. So if there was to figure out, like they did in Tanzania many years ago, what should be the parameters? What should they be looking at? Because the power sharing, what should be, that one was worked on, the army is half-half. So what do you think should be done?
Well, the infrastructure is already there. The Arusha peace agreement is still there, even though it has not been completely implemented. And there were some reservations from some people. The structure is there. So the question becomes, since Arusha said limitation of term limit, I mean the term limits, we have to go back and look at it. Do we want to say there will not be no term limits anymore? Do we want to say everybody who's basically willing to use force should continue on as a president? But the thing is to come back to that and look at the spirit of that foundation, which actually, in fact, if you look at it, the respite of peace we have in Burundi is actually the result of this agreement, which was basically power sharing and then installing a democracy that is a consultative kind of democracy, where the dialogue is continuous rather than rely just on elections and say, okay, the winner take all. That has been the novelty in Africa, where they don't talk about winner take all as elections, but they take in consideration all the issues that can cause problems. So that's what they should go back to. And whoever is the new, if they ever find a new facilitator, they should actually go back and revisit that Arusha Accord. And that's the foundation.
And do you think...
Douglas, before you come in, the way my brother said, the bottom line is President Nkurunziza violated the Arusha Accord in letter and spirit. There is no reason why it should not be revisited and reactivated. There is no reason why we don't get a transitional government of national unity in Burundi to prepare for fresh election, and then we push Burundi to a new direction.
I see. In that case, should Nkurunziza be part of the solution, or should we just step aside?
He has to step aside because he has his term according to the spirit of the Arusha.
So why should he continue dragging his feet into the affairs of Burundi? Burundi was not made for Nkurunziza. Burundi, there are many Burundis. Burundi is for all Burundis, and we have got a lot of human resource in Burundi who can run that country.
Why should
someone stick to power because he has got the control of the guns?
What do you think, John?
I agree with our brother Suleiman. If you are part of the problem, it doesn't make too much sense of continuing doing it. And to be fair with people in Burundi, it's a small group surrounding Nkurunziza that is actually the hardliners who believe they can force themselves into running the country. There was actually a survey before 2 years before this crisis, asking the Burundi people, should Nkurunziza try to attempt a third term? 62% of the Burundians says no, he should not. And so you can see that the majority of Burundians believe there is enough, there are enough people in Burundi who can lead the country. So he should step aside.
Okay, briefly, we're running out of time, John, before I go to Suleiman. How do you see the situation working out in the short term?
Well, short term, I cannot tell. Because there are so many fluid, pieces of the puzzle. On one end, the vice president says they are willing to go out and do a dialogue outside of the country, and then you find that in the same government, they are hardliners who say the dialogue is going to only be in Burundi and no. No outside, no people who are outside will not be part of it. Mm-hmm. And they've actually issued our arrest warrant to those people who are on the other side of the table. So you could see how complicated this is.
I see. Suleiman, your last thought in the last 30 seconds.
Douglas, at the moment, violence seems to be escalating. But the bottom line is that the violence in Burundi is not only a problem of Burundi, it is a problem of Uganda because the people are moving into Uganda. It's a problem of Tanzania. It is a problem of Rwanda. It's a problem of Kenya. So it is upon the regional leaders, those who are democratic, plus the international community and the AU, to take decisive steps as quickly as possible because it is spilling all over these countries. The citizens of Uganda are inconvenienced. The citizens of Burundi, are inconvenienced. The citizens of Rwanda are inconvenienced. And the whole region. So the time for these dictators has passed out. They better change the facilitators and reactivate peace negotiation in Burundi as quickly as possible.
In last 10 seconds, John, do you see that happening?
It can happen.
I see.
Thank you.
Well, we shall remain optimistic and hope this issue is resolved because, as Suleiman points out, it concerns all those countries in that region because they are interconnected. They are one people in the actual sense. So we hope that some solution will be figured out and soon enough. Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Let me thank our panel, John Manrakiza, a member of the Burundi diaspora in the U.S., and thank you, Suleiman Mugula, an independent panelist. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you, sir.
It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Douglas.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. Our producer, as usual, was Jackson Mufunganya. Our engineer tonight was Charles Sisk. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Simpuga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.